Yo, what the fuck is the motherfucking deal? This your boy, this your motherfucking boy, King Nona Uncensored. We got new music Fridays, and we got some Game 2 NBA games to talk about. But the first thing that we got to talk about is Nikola Jokic winning his third MVP. So congratulations to Nikola Jokic for winning his third MVP. My personal thoughts on this is, you know, I feel like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander deserved to win the MVP over Jokic. Now, Jokic's numbers are pretty much around the same, if you ask me. And the Denver Nuggets were solid, but they weren't the best team in the conference. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was averaging 30 a game. You know what I'm saying? And his numbers were pretty good for a two guard, and they had the number one team in the conference. They went from play-in team to number one in the West. You know, that deserves a little bit more respect than a Jokic who, you know, Denver team did what it was supposed to do. And yeah, I don't understand the logic behind this decision. And someone else agreed with my sentiments, as Shaquille O'Neal was on Inside the NBA, you know, along with Jokic. You know, he congratulated him, but, you know, he said that he felt like Shai deserved the MVP. And this nigga Shannon Sharp criticized Shaq for that, saying that he was jealous of Joker and being a hater. And, you know, there's people online calling Shaq a racist and all this shit. Like, that was ridiculous. That was super fucking ridiculous, dog. Uncalled for. And unnecessary. But Shaq had time today, because Shaq not only responded on social media, but he responded with a diss record. Like, man, Metro and all them niggas, man, they don't know what they started, and Cat Williams and them. So I got the post right here. So in response to Shannon Sharp, Shaq said, "You took me sticking up for Shai as jealousy? Shows how smart you are and how you say anything to get clicks. So here's some clickbait for you. If you ain't ranked in the top 10 in your profession, then you can't speak on me. Don't forget, I know what you did to get to where you at. Me jealous sounds like you jealous. I know you're trying to stay relevant by gossiping on your podcast. We don't believe you. You need more people. And in case you forgot, 4 rings, 3 finals, MVP top 50, and top 75. Google me. And to be quite frank, with all this new success you got, you still under me. You don't know my work ethic. But according to you, I work less than you, but I'm worth more than you. Make it make sense. I love you too. If you need help making money, it's better ways than gossiping. I'm too old for this shit. Love always. The most rapper who never took it serious. Remember, I don't know you. In the words of Skip Bayless, I'm better than you. G14 classification. I have it. You don't. Not in my profession. And your GOAT debate. Never wanted to be the GOAT. I wanted to be who you should greet me as, the most dominant ever. My thoughts about this is, damn. He read Shannon Sharp for filth. I feel like both of them went too far here. Because Shannon Sharp said that if you worked as hard as I did, you would have been the greatest player ever. And Shannon Sharp felt like Shaq is envious because he's never been in the GOAT debate. And just like in this poll, Shaq has never put himself in the greatest of all time debate. He's always said that he was the most dominant. And he said that Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, and Kobe Bryant are GOAT candidates. In his eyes. So I don't think Shaq is jealous of Jokic at all. Now, has he criticized big men in the past? Absolutely. Could he be envious of Dwight Howard? Maybe. But in my opinion, I think both these guys took their criticism of each other way too hard and way too personal. Pause. But that's crazy. And sticking with Shaq. So Shawnee Henderson, formerly Shawnee O'Neal, right? His ex-wife. Said that, you know, she didn't know if she was ever in love with Shaquille O'Neal. Now, Shaq responded with, if I were me, I wouldn't be in love with me either. Classy response. But I am by no means a relationship expert. But fellas, this case right here shows that you could do all for a woman. You could provide for her. Now, I'm not saying that Shaq was a perfect husband. Shaq admits himself that he fucked up that relationship. And praise Shawnee for holding it down. But she had a lot of this man babies. I don't know. I mean, but I'm going to tell it to you like this. Currently, as it stands, at least 80% of women are looking for financial security in a man over love and happiness. Long as they're financially secure, they can grow to love somebody later on. Long as they're providing for them financially, everything's all good. And they're even willing to take a little shit from these people. But long as you provide financial security, you're locked up, basically. And they don't necessarily have to love you or even like you. They'll thug it out and stick it out because you're providing for them financially. But the true test is when you can no longer provide for them financially, or you hit a rough patch financially. That's how you can tell whether your lady is for you. Or whether your lady is down for you. I'm just saying, for my fellas out there, especially the homies making six figures or more, be careful what you pick in a partner. Pick your partner wisely. Because I feel like Shawnee should have just kept that bullshit to herself. In my eyes. I mean, you know, Shawnee basically presented herself to the general public as a loyal wife who was very much in love with her husband in the beginning. You know, but you know, if she presented herself as not in love off the rip, then it would have been a little bit more respectable. But for her to switch up randomly out of the blue, yeah, I don't like it. All right, so New Orleans Pelicans news. So all signs point towards the New Orleans Pelicans prioritizing Trey Murphy over Brandon Ingram as their wing of the future. New Orleans will have Brandon Ingram's $36 million salary and valuable draft capital to attempt to pair another star alongside Zion Williamson. Now, in my opinion, I feel like Brandon Ingram rushed back too fast after his injury to come back and play in the playoffs. So, my question to y'all is, where would be the best location for Brandon Ingram to go? Me, personally, the best trade that I think that they should do for Ingram is CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram and a couple of first-round picks for Kevin Durant. Now, obviously, that would be the first step of the exact operation, though. Obviously, you would have to build around Zion a little bit more. But those are the two guys that I would sacrifice because Ingram wasn't that great in that Thunder series. And I think that's why, you know, and I feel like Trey Murphy, he was killing this season. You know, he had got hurt early on. But once he came back from that injury, he was a whole different dude and he was a different monster. So I could understand why, or where else would Brandon Ingram likely go? I mean, I could see Utah Jazz. I could see could you pair him alongside Giannis? Finally get the Middleton the fuck up out of here for him. I mean, I'd love for my Detroit Pistons to acquire him somehow, to put him alongside Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, and Jalen Duren. I'd love to see that. Make a draft day trade or some shit like that. I don't know. Because this draft class, a lot of people are going to be looking to trade some of their draft capital this year due to the fact that this draft doesn't have necessarily a generational talent. Just a bunch of guys that can fulfill some team needs. Where else Ingram would be a good fit at? Let's see. Golden State could definitely use B.I. Golden State could definitely use him. The Miami Heat, Orlando Magic, Philadelphia 76ers. Do a sign and trade. I already said Phoenix. Sacramento Kings. I mean, B.I. could fit on a lot of these rosters, bro. I'm not gonna hold you. But they picked Murphy over Ingram. All right, so 2008 NBA champion Glenn Big Baby Davis was sentenced by a federal judge to 3.5 years in prison plus 3 years supervised release for his November 2023 conviction in an alleged scheme to defraud the NBA's health care benefits plan. 20 players participated in it. Davis was ordered to pay $80,000 in restitution. The conditions of his supervised release include attending a financial management class and mandatory drug treatment. So free Big Baby. You know, Big Baby had some jokes on social media about his prison sentence. Y'all can look that up for yourself. Yeah, he took the sentence well. I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, the ringleader got 10 years in jail. So it wasn't too bad. I'm also starting to notice the hostile changing of the guard, the hostile takeover. You see the Anthony Edwards, you see the Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders, you see the Luka Doncic's and the Nikola Jokic's taking the reins from the Giannis's, the Booker's, the Fox's, you know what I'm saying? And of course, taking the torch away from the LeBron James, Chris Pauls, Kevin Durant's generation. I've hinted at this changing of the guard for years. I mean, we've all seen this coming, Pauls. We've all seen it. And none of it shocks me either, you know? Because this group of players, man, these are going to be the faces of the league for years to come. Like, these guys are not playing. And I just wanted to salute them because, you know, once this LeBron generation is out the league, I feel like the NBA could go back to being dogs. So, the Phoenix Suns have decided on a new head coach, and they are about to sign him to an 8-figure deal. The Suns selected Bucks former head coach of the championship-winning Milwaukee Bucks in 2021, Mike Budenholzer. And I feel like he's the right fit for this group of players. I think he could get those guys to respond a lot better than Frank Vogel could, because Vogel is more of a defensive-minded coach, and he didn't have the defensive personnel to do so. Mike Budenholzer has more of a balance offensively coaching and defensively coaching. But the million-dollar question is this Big Three still going to be together by the time the next season starts? As I said before, like, Phoenix doesn't have any picks until, like, what, 2030? So they have to decide for themselves, like, are they going to move Kevin Durant for picks? Devin Booker, you know, has interest in joining the Oklahoma City Thunder next year. Could they trade him there and get the draft capital that they want? Because I know they need it. Because they gambled by trading all their draft capital for Beal and Durant, and it has not worked out for them. So I'm anxious to see, like, what the Nuggets look like at the beginning of I'm interested to see how the Phoenix Suns look like after the offseason, the first day of the NBA season next year. Oh, man. The game, this is Rick Ross for no reason. I don't see any reasons why, outside of him defending Drake, that he's dissing Rick Ross. What the fuck for? I mean, he made a diss record towards Ross called Freeway's Revenge. It was cool. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the game specializes in diss records, so I don't expect, like, you know, anything whack from Game as far as diss records. But I feel like this shit is unnecessary, in my personal opinion. Rick Ross responded on social media as usual, as he should, with y'all niggas starving. That's basically what he said on Instagram. Yeah, I need to see Game's in-game before we judge, to see why he decided to step in the ring with Ross in the first place. Speaking of stepping into the ring, so Gunna and Future have been going at it back and forth on social media. Future posted a subliminal shot towards Gunna on social media, talking about your new album's not fucking with my mixtape. And then Gunna responded, you know what I'm saying? It was a little back and forth between these two guys. And honestly, I want to see that matchup. I'd rather see this matchup than I'd rather see Game and Rick Ross, because nobody came to see that battle, Otis. Like, I want to see Gunna and Future because they're very similar and they are a perfect match for a battle. Because, you know, Future kind of took shots on at Gunna on his album, We Don't Trust You. And many other rappers like 21 Savage and Lil Baby have dissed and pretty much left Gunna out there by himself to dry, basically. And Gunna has survived, you know, the snitching allegations. Because in my opinion, looking back at everything, Gunna didn't necessarily snitch. He said yes to everything. But you gotta think about it, like, he's not set to testify against Young Thug. He didn't necessarily say anything incriminating about Young Thug that could send him to jail. And Gunna did his time and got out of jail. But I'm anxious to see, is Future's mixtape better than Gunna's new album? Because Gunna's album came out, but Future's mixtape was supposed to come out on Friday, but it did not drop for some reason. Or maybe it could be dropping later on in the week. Oh boy, I can't believe this is happening, but I'm not surprised. Are the Los Angeles Lakers that desperate to keep asses in seats? A lot of real Los Angeles Lakers fans, and not the LeBron James fans of the Lakers, they don't like LeBron James and they want him gone. But the Lakers are willing to sign LeBron any contract he wants, any price. Bron is seeking like a 2-year contract extension. And the Lakers are willing to draft his son, too. So that those two could play together 1 year. And this is per Dave McMiniman, who is up LeBron James' butt crack. He's a Bron butt sniffer. So it's got to be a little bit of fact in there, fact in his raps. But that's a damn shame. I feel like if I was the GM of the Lakers, I would let LeBron walk or pick a place to be traded so that I could build around Anthony Davis and the role players, in my personal opinion. But the Lakers have made their choice, and I have a feeling that D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura will not be back next year. You can book it. They will be replaced with a superstar player to go alongside AD and LeBron James. Now that we know that this new information. So Bron's about to be signed to another contract that he'll be super overpaid for. It is what it is. Let me see if there's any more interesting news going on in the NBA before we get to it. Before we get to the NBA games. So OG Anunoby will be out for game 3 versus the Pacers. He suffered a hamstring strain during the game, and I could just tell that he didn't look too good. And oh yeah, I forgot to bring up that the Suns fired Frank Vogel. that was just dirty. And I feel like that was an attempt for James Jones to save his ass. GMs do this all the time, but I feel like Frank Vogel was given a raw deal and not given a chance to at least last a couple of years. But they felt like, you know, he wasn't good enough for the team that he was given, despite the team suffering multiple injuries and then bouncing back and climbing all the way to a 6 seed, in which they were swept by the Minnesota Timberwolves in the playoffs, which was a disappointing end to their season. So I get why they fired him, but I felt like he needed another year. That's just me. Patrick Beverley has been officially suspended 4 games for forcefully throwing a basketball multiple times at spectators and an inappropriate interaction with a reporter from ESPN. I'm not surprised. Pat Bev exits to all his seasons always involves some crazy controversy. And so, the Charlotte Hornets land a new head coach in Charles Lee. He's got a 4-year deal as a head coach. Charles Lee, who is the executive vice president of basketball operations with Jeff Peterson on the Celtics, he was a part of the, he was an assistant coach on the 2021 Bucks championship. So Charles Lee will be a first-time head coach. We'll see what he's got as he succeeds Steve Clifford, who's been a coach for the Hornets 50-11 times. Now, this was a funny story. I mean, it's not funny, but it is funny. So, Milwaukee Bucks forward has Thanasis Antetokounmpo has sustained a torn Achilles tendon and will require surgery. My question is, how the fuck did he tear his Achilles? Did he tear his Achilles jumping up and down, cheering? Did he tear his Achilles passing a Gatorade? Did he tear his Achilles doing high fives to his Bucks teammates? Like, how the fuck does this happen? I don't understand that one. That shit's hilarious. Now, let's get to these game twos. You know, this ain't the main event at all. All right, so the New York Knicks defeated the Indiana Pacers 130-121. Let's look at the box scores first before we talk about it. Tyrese Halliburton, his best game of the playoffs easily. 34 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists. This is the Tyrese Halliburton that we've been looking for, that's been missing since the first half of the season before he got injured. Andrew Nembhard, 15 points. Pascal Siakam, 14 points. But the story of the game was the bench. T.J. McConnell, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 12 assists. Obi Toppin, 20 points. Ben Shepherd hit some devastating Nikhil Alexander Walker shots with 11 points. But unfortunately, the New York Knicks were able to come back into the game. But we'll get to that in a moment. 5 niggas in double figures for the Knicks. OG Anunoby, before his untimely injury, had 28 points. Josh Hart had 19 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. Isaiah Hartenstein, 14 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. Dante DiVincenzo, 28 points. Jalen Brunson, 29 points. So, my thoughts about this is, right? J. Jalen Brunson had exited the game in the second quarter with an injury. And they weren't sure if he was going to come back, but he came back and brought the Knicks back into the game because the Pacers had full control of this game. And once Brunson got back into the game slipped right through their fingers. Indiana could have won game one and game two. But their inability to close kind of plagued them in trying to steal one of these games in New York. So the Knicks take a 2-0 lead over the Pacers. The Pacers just have to protect home court. If they don't, you already know what it is. They're going home. And the Knicks have been a very tough team in this playoffs. All right, let's move on to the next game, too. As the Cleveland Cavaliers shockingly beat the shit out of the Boston Celtics at home as they tie the series 1-1 as the Cleveland Cavaliers defeated the Boston Celtics 118-94. Six niggas in double figures for the motherfucking Cavs as Max Strus had 12 points, Isaac Okoro had 12 points, Evan Mobley had 21 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, Donovan Mitchell had 29 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, Darius Garland had 14 points, Caris LeVert had 21 points off the bench. Cavaliers were just hitting all their shots in that game. Period, point blank. Now, Boston, I was disappointed in the Celtics in this game. Even though their home record is not as good as their road record, I truly believe that Boston's going to bounce back in this game and win the next three. But let's look at their box scores. Jaylen Brown, 19 points. Jason Tatum, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Al Horford, 11 points. Derek White, 10 points. Peyton Pritchard, 13 points off the bench. Yeah, I think this was another wake-up call. This is another wake-up call for the Celtics. I truly believe that these next three games are not going to be good for the Cavs. I think regardless of whether the Cavs currently own home court advantage, I truly believe in game three that Boston's going to easily snatch that shit back. Pause. Let's look at yesterday's game. All right, so the Dallas Mavericks steal home court from the Oklahoma City Thunder as the Dallas Mavericks defeated the Oklahoma City Thunder 119-110. PJ Washington, 29 points, 11 rebounds. Kyrie Irving, kind of disappointing in this performance, 9 points, but 11 assists. Shot 2 of 8 from the field. That's not Kyrie-like. I'm surprised they won this game, but P.J. Washington was one of the major reasons why. And then, of course, Luka Doncic bounced back with a 29-point, 10-rebound, 7-assist performance. Despite Luka suffering multiple injuries throughout this game, including bashing his face into the goddamn floor. You know, he's already been battling knee problems, leg problems, you name it. He's battled it. But like the G that he is, he finished the game. Let's look at Oklahoma City. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 33 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. Jalen Williams, 20 points. Chet Holmgren, 11 points. Yeah, man. Outside of Williams, the Thunder didn't get as much help for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And it seemed like in the first game, the Thunder was moving the ball a lot better. In this game, it was a lot of ISO. Just like Dallas in the first game, it was a lot of Luka ISO. Luka wasn't hitting the shots like he normally was. You know, this game, Kyrie wasn't hitting the shots like we're used to seeing him hitting. But PJ Washington picked up the slack for what Kyrie was lacking. But yeah, man, that was just a disappointing performance for the Mavericks. I mean, for the Thunder. And now the Mavericks can keep control of their home court and go up possibly 3-1 if they win these games, of course. But I think this series might go 7 games. I'm not going to hold you. These two are so evenly matched on both ends of the court. Because I think we already talked about game 2. Of the Minnesota and Nuggets. So, all right, y'all. We didn't get to the main event. Y'all been patiently waiting. Just like an AIDS test. What's the result? Not positive. Who the best? Pac, Nas, and Big. Ain't no best. East, West, North, South. Floor style gritty. I embrace y'all with napalm. Goes left chest face gone. How can Nas be garbage? Symbiotis at your college. Burner the side of your dough. Come out of my throne. I got this. Y'all know what the fuck it is. All right, y'all. We got new music Fridays, ladies and gentlemen. And we are going to start with Ghostface Killah. Set the tone. He put up the track list the other day, and the track list made me very interested into seeing what Ghost still had left in the tank. You know, he's a veteran rapper. His last album, Ghostface Killahs, was amazing. And I was wondering, like, could he duplicate that and some? And we're about to find out. Oh, set the tone, Guns N' Roses. But, you know, all right. Let's start off with 6 minutes featuring Harley, Jim Jones, and Sheik Luch. Man, this is New York excellence. You know, Jim and Sheik and Ghostface are titans of New York. And I expected nothing less. And they met my expectations for what I wanted to see here. And this was a banger. Great way to start the project off, in my opinion. Pair of Hammers featuring Method Man. Classic Wu-Tang shit right here. If you're a fan of Wu-Tang, you'd appreciate this record. Hands down. Skate Odyssey featuring October London and Raekwon. Bruh. This gives me Supreme Clientele vibes. It just does. You know, it's definitely a skater record, in my personal opinion. It's definitely one of those records or whatnot. And it's just one of those two-step records, you know? Very adult. Very smooth. Very cool. Yeah, man. Yeah, when Ray stepped on that shit, bruh. Man, Ray definitely caught a body on here. This is like his tempo. It seems like it's more his speed than Ghost, but Ghost could get on some shit like this too, you know? Alright, so Scar Tissue featuring Nas. Woo. Pretty good lyricism, good little back and forth with Ghostface. Kilo in the Safe with Iceman. This was dope as fuck. Then, you know, we got a skit about Ghostface top 5 cereals. His choices were just like, what? I didn't care for his choices for top 5 cereals. I'm not going front. I only like one, and that was the Raisin Bran joint. You know, I like Raisin Bran Crunch, though, myself. No Face with Kanye West. Yo, how many times is Kanye and Ghostface going to rap over the Mighty Healthy drums, man? They wearing that shit out, man. How However, though, Kanye and Ghost continue their great chemistry that they've had over the years. You know, they were on Like That remix. They did, I forget the song that they did with Pusha T on the Good Music record. I forget the name of it. Champion Sound featuring DJ Benetton. This is probably my least favorite on the album. Not a bad song, but compared to the other tracks, this paled in comparison. Cape Fear featuring Fat Joe and Harley was dope as hell. Second skit, you know. Then we, you know, I don't have much to say about it. Plan B featuring Harley, probably one of my favorite songs on the album. It's a girl song, but it's fucking fire, though. And continuing the trend of girl records, I don't know about y'all, but Ghostface pretty much has a knack for these girl records, in my opinion. Bad Bitch featuring Trevor Jackson and Ja Rule. This samples Miguel, How Many Drinks. By Miguel. And I definitely enjoyed this interpolation of that song. Locked In featuring AZ and BB. I think that's how you pronounce that artist's name. But BB, if she's the person singing on that hook, she bodied that. Locked In pretty much samples Mary J. Blige, Be Happy. That Curtis Mayfield joint, I forget the name of that. But AZ and Ghost went crazy on it. This reminds me if Sugar Hill was made in 2024. That's what it would sound like by AZ. Skit 3, I don't remember it very much. It's not really memorable. Touch You featuring Sean Wea continues the girl records. Definitely enjoyed that one. Shots with Busta Rhymes, Serrani, and Harley. Definitely enjoyed this. This is more of an Afrobeat vibe, on the beach vibe. Trap Phone featuring Chucky Hollywood was the biggest surprise to me, because Ghostface killed this. And this is Ghostface rapping over a new age trapping B beat, and he just murders it. Outro is just the outro, him talking, him saying goodbye to everybody. And then the last track, Yup, featuring Remy Ma, is what I played in the intro. And bruh, this is just classic current New York. This is just current New York, bro. Dope ass song. All in all, Ghostface Killah set the tone. I ain't gonna lie, y'all. This is his best album since Fish Scale. I definitely enjoyed it. It was well-rounded. It was very versatile. And Ghostface Killah wasn't afraid to step outside his zone and try different things. And I gotta give respect where respect is due. Ghostface, the veteran, still has a lot left to offer this game of rap. All right, let's move on to the next album. We got Conway the Machine dropping his new project off, Slant Face Killer. I feel like Conway the Machine got to take a goddamn break, bro. Slant Face Killer got to offer. All right, y'all, let's see. Despertar. It's just some singing in there and then a crowd screaming La Maquina, which is the machine in Espanol. Muddy featuring Stove God Cooks. Let me tell you something, man. That goddamn Stove God stay with the feature kills. But, man, it's your time. You gotta drop this year, bro. Come on, man. Come on, Stove. Where you at? Give and Give with Cool and Dre. This was cool. Good album filler. Milano Nights Part 1. This was okay. It was alright. Kim Express with Larry June. I told y'all time and time again, not the biggest fan of Larry June. Didn't care for his verse at all on this one. I could have done without this one. My personal opinion. But then the energy kicks back up with Meth Back featuring Flea Lord, Method Man, and SK the King. That SK the King, I could tell he from Baltimore. That accent, that nigga was saying, horseshoe, cashew. You know what I mean? But Meth Back was a banger. Like, Method Man, of course. I don't think Method Man has a bad verse ever in the history of rap. Ninja Man featuring Swiss Beats. This was cool. Bertino with Joey Badass. This was the first song that I heard that was for this project. Conway and Joey, just a dream to watch on track. 10 and Raya Interlude featuring Key Glock and Raya Maxwell. Both these songs are fire flames. Definitely current sounding. Dasani, I don't know. Dasani could be a single. Not gonna hold you. And so can 10 with Key Glock. And another song that could be a single. Raw featuring Tech N9ne. Who would have thought we would have seen this collab between these two guys? Oh man. Definitely some dream collabs on this album. Surf and Turf featuring Jay Worthy, 211, Absol, and TF. I mean, I think I could distinguish who TF and Jay Worthy is. I couldn't tell when 211 went, but I know who Absol is. Absol had the hardest verse on here. He killed that. Karimi and album filler. The Red Moon in Osaka featuring Raekwon. I'm mad Raekwon didn't have a verse on here, but Conway was killing this shit. All in all, Slapface Killer measured up against Conway's other projects. It lacks in comparison. But however, this is still a very good project from start to finish. There are a couple tracks that I could have done without of. But, you know, I have higher expectations when it comes to Conway the Machine compared to other rappers. I am going back to a majority of Slant Face Killer. But when you compare it to the other albums like La Maquina, like From a King to a God, it's just not on the same level. But my thoughts on the project is this is a pretty decent project and it's above average. Last but totally not least, we got Gunna, y'all. Gunna, highly anticipated follow-up to A Gift and a Curse, which marked the comeback of Gunna after the Young Thug case. He drops a new album called One of One. And he's been technically out there on his own. Collage, this is a pretty decent opener. Not the particular track that I would have opened on, but this is pretty good. One of One, banger. Fire. Neck on a Yacht. banger. I like the slick wordplay on this song. What's up? What's am? Fire. This was all right. Hakuna Matata was okay. Prada Them with Offset is a pretty decent collab. Trish, I could see that being played in a strip club for sure. On One Tonight was good. Back in the A was cool. Trio was fire. Still Prevail. Probably could argue for my favorite song on the album. Because he was talking a lot of shit on Still Prevail. Talking a lot to his critics. Blackjack was pretty good as far as the introspection. Dollar Signs with Normani was dope. Clear My Rain with Leon Bridges definitely probably could argue for best song on the album. Conscience was good. The Time was good. Let It Breathe with Roddy Ricch is a good album filler. Life's Changing was great. Today I Get Did Good was excellent. Time Reveals, Be Careful What You Wish For. Great two-track combination. All in all, One of One by Gunna is easily his best project. This is the most introspective that he has been, and he has a lot of substance on here. He's not the best rapper on the planet, but his flow, his shit talking, and some of his punchlines were very dope to listen to. And One of One as a project is very complete. It has your bangers, has your strip club songs, has your love songs, has your introspective thinking songs. And this is an album that I could mostly play from start to finish, because my issue was with Gunna over the years was none of his albums seemed to have like replay value as a whole. Only like a third of the tracks on the album previous to this have had replay value. I could rock with well over half of this album. And I feel like this is Gunna at his best from start to finish to me. But all right, y'all. I want to thank y'all for coming through and listening to Game 2 of the second round of the NBA playoffs, New Music Fridays, and I'm out.